This is Called by God, stories of ordained women in the Anglican Diocese of Grafton. I'm Reverend Kathy Ridd, and welcome. Today I'm in conversation with the Reverend Judy Edwards. Judy, thank you so much for taking time to share part of your story with me. How did you begin to hear God's call to ministry and respond to it?
Well, I don't think I ever heard God's call as such. God didn't speak to me. I kind of fell into being very comfortable in the sanctuary, very comfortable as a lay minister, very comfortable being on parish council, very comfortable being, you know, working in the diocese and being really actively involved in the church. It seems that I had no intention of ordination at all. It had never crossed my mind. The problem was I suddenly got hit with something from left field when a clergy friend of mine came up to me and challenged me about the fact that she felt that I was being called to ministry and or to priesthood. And I argued that and said that's not possible and left it at that. But then from that point on, arrows started to fly. And I started to feel uncomfortable. At one stage, I got to the point where I couldn't sleep. I started dreaming. I imagined myself behind an altar. I saw things happening there. I just started to get a really strong gut feeling and couldn't identify what it was, but I knew that there was something missing from my life and that somewhere along the track I was going to have to go forward with it. It got so bad, I didn't tell anyone. It got so bad, I thought, I'll fix this. I'll go to the bishop and that'll be it. So I went to the bishop and he said, what took you so long? I had a lot to think about because the boys had just left home and I was in a small town. I was, sort of very actively involved in that town. I had a job with lots of responsibility running an aged care facility. And I was just a very busy person. And yet there was something just prodding. So in the end, I thought, okay, I'm going to have to give this everything I've got and see what happens. I left the town I was in. I left job, I left friends, I left security, I left very little money, nothing, and went to the big smoke. And had never studied except I was an RN trained in the hospital system, but had never written anything academically and was frightened, terribly frightened about having to write essays and to put myself on the line. I guess vulnerability was something I just couldn't handle very well at that time. So anyway, off I went, had to get myself a job up there, started full-time study, had to get, into everything that was going on, placements, what have you. Within a year, I fell over backwards. I crashed and burned. And from being a diocesan ordinand to being hung out to dry was not a really nice thing. So anyway, 3 years in recovery, and during that time I thought things would just go away, but they didn't. The gut feeling got stronger and stronger and stronger, and I got to the stage where I could not imagine myself anywhere else, doing anything else or being anyone else. It almost seemed as if I already was what God was calling me to be. So I decided, well, back to the bishop. And the bishop said, come on, you've got to be joking. I'm not taking you on. You'll have to prove yourself. I'd like some high distinctions, and I'd also like to make sure that you're mentally fit. That was a challenge that I wasn't prepared for. But anyway, did that, and he still wasn't sure. So I went back to the panel. They said I didn't have a spiritual bone in my body and that I was so determined to prove that I was mentally okay that they couldn't see a vocation at all. I then decided, well, if that's it, that's it. God had other ideas. The bishop still couldn't quite get his head around it, so he referred me to Genevieve Blackmore, who is the bishop, a bishop down in Melbourne, or was, I think she's moved on now, but anyway, she's down there. She was a priest at the time. She took one look at me and said, you have a very strong vocation. I can't understand what all the fuss is about. You know, I'm happy for you to go ahead. And then finally the bishop agreed to ordain me. That was my journey to ordination. And since then I am just so pleased that I kept on going.
There was a lot of challenges there that you've talked about. Was there anything else that was challenging?
I think that I became very intent on proving that I was good enough. That was a challenge for me. Nothing was ever good enough. So anything I wrote had to be perfect. It couldn't be anything less than perfect. And so I shied away from writing anything. And I can remember thinking as I got closer and closer to ordination, even though I'd been successful in my preaching homiletics subject and practical preaching, I still felt that I was a disaster in terms of writing. And I felt that I could never be ordained because I could never write a sermon, let alone two or three in a week. I could never do it. And so I got to ordination thinking, this is terrible. I won't be able to do it. And I couldn't. I have never been able to write a sermon since. And yet the power of the Holy Spirit has just been phenomenal because I've never not been able to preach God's word. And I'm so grateful for that, and it's given me so much joy. I was very fortunate in that I did not have anyone saying, oh, you're a woman, you can't do that. As a matter of fact, I had most of my experiences have been very positive with men. There's only been one person who's refused to take communion. But apart from that, I've been fully supported by my congregations, by my fellow clergy, and I don't think there have been too many other challenges. The biggest challenge for me was being a workaholic. I was a single woman. I had no family commitments at the time. That was 6 years ago. And so it was work. It was work. I loved it. I was passionate about it. I wanted to do it, but I couldn't think of any other way of living. Mm. And so I would very, very strongly say that one of the challenges for people who do not have family or who are not living with family is getting that balance right and self-care. There's just no one else to do it for you, so you have to do it yourself. I've been very fortunate in that I've had very good wardens to do that with me.
So who were your biggest supporters as you were first going into that discernment process?
Going into the discernment process, I think there was a parish priest once I got to the city, and he was exceptionally supportive, particularly when I'd been told, no, you won't be ordained. He was amazing. He went out to bat for me. He did everything he could. And there was a lecturer by the name of Graham Garrett who was well known in those circles as a St. Mark's, and he was extraordinary. He came to see me when I was sick. He was the only person who came to see me, and he encouraged me, he prayed with me, and he kept me focused on my study and offered any kind of help he could. Another person who sat with me pulling while I was pulling teeth out writing essays was a very dear friend. And, you know, he put in 8 years of me writing essays and me throwing things at the wall and you know, throwing plates and cups and everything else I could find. And yet he sat with me and he brought more cups of tea in for me. My kids were happy. They respected my choices and were supportive from a distance. I don't know that I had terribly much more support. I actually had a lot of support from my clients in the drug and alcohol field. They were amazing, these men who, you know, sort of were addicts, and yet as we worked together, they were really supportive of what I was doing.
You've talked a little bit about some of the challenges for ordained women, but could we explore that a little bit more, the challenges for ordained women, specifically in the Anglican Church of Australia today?
I am going to say that I don't think necessarily there are challenges for women specifically unless they're in certain dioceses. I think that the challenges that are ahead of us in the Anglican Church in Australia are not tied to gender. I think that they are more tied to how the Anglican Church and its wonderful tradition can speak to a secular society. My love and passion is the Anglican Church and its traditions. But ritual and liturgy, if we use them properly, can still speak to non-churched people, but not within the church. I think we've got to go out of the church. I think we've got to be prepared to give the four walls away and be prepared to sit with people in the street. I just can't see any other way. Going out to meet them in coffee shops, wherever they are, and being prepared to chat the gospel. The other thing, of course, will be what happens in terms of worker priests. I think that we are losing the capacity to have full-time priests, and I think we need to look at models of ministry. But all of that is not gender-based, as I said.
What gives you joy in your ministry?
I have to say straight out, presiding at the Eucharist, I can't, that joy is just, it can't be stifled. No matter how I'm feeling before a service, no matter how I'm whatever, I just can't. It's just so connecting for me, but it's connecting with the people of God and worshipping together around the table. But it's also that connection, knowing that I am representative for God amongst God's people. And to me, that is just such a privilege. It's so powerful. And I guess going with that would also be the ability to facilitate a deeper, meaningful worship for people and with people during liturgical services. I could never imagine being anyone else. I've had such joy in my ministry. I've had such wonderful things happen for me and for the people I've been caring for. I just can't imagine it.
Judy, thank you so much for sharing with me today. Next time, I'm in conversation with the Reverend Rhonda Callender. I hope you'll join me then. Called by God is produced in the Diocese of Grafton as part of the celebration to mark the 30th anniversary of the ordination of women in the diocese. Produced and edited by the Reverend Kathy Ridd, copyright 2023.